This is Butchertown Rundown, a Racing Louisville podcast brought to you by the Beautiful Game Network.
Welcome to the Butchertown Rundown, a podcast about the only top-tier professional sports team in the state of Kentucky, Racing Louisville Football Club. I am Tom Benson. That is Becky Morgan. And Becky, we're coming off a tough loss at Fill the Fam. We've got big questions. We've got big concerns. And when you have big questions and big concerns, you bring in the big guns. Joining us is Michael Shaw from Fleur de Lis FC. Michael, how are you feeling this evening?
I'm actually feeling good. we were talking before we started recording. I'm kind of level-headed about everything, so I never try to get too up or too down. So, one loss doesn't send me into a tailspin, but I definitely have opinions.
Becky, would you say that you are level-headed, two up, or two down right now?
Pretty darn level-headed. I was heated after the game. Anybody who was with me during the game will know how frustrated I was. And I went home frustrated and I was mad the next morning. But, you know, the more time has gone on, I accept it. You know, I accept it as the bad loss it is.
Well, Becky, we should have fun tonight because right now I am the yin to your yang. Because when I left the stadium, I was feeling pretty good. But as the time has passed since that loss, my mood has soured, and I've got some opinions on that. But we've got a structure here on the Butchertown Rundown, even for a special episode like tonight. Becky, let's start with the starting line.
So the big news is, of course, that our own Savannah DeMello got called up to the national team, and that just, that's a nice chaser to the bad match that we had this weekend, because she has absolutely deserved it. Mm-hmm. It's been very gratifying to hear fans of, you know, from every different team, from people with Gotham, with Angel City in, you know, their Twitter handles being like, oh, this is so deserved. This is someone who should have been called up already. Of course, we never like it when a player has to drop out for a reason. And of course, we don't know why Trinity Rodman had to leave. We know it's a family commitment, but those can be not good things. So yeah. Wishing all the best to Trinity Rodman, but I'm really excited for Savannah DeMello to have this experience. And if we're lucky, we will see her get some minutes in these friendlies coming up on September 3rd and September 9th against Nigeria. And so everybody should tune in and watch those games.
I don't know about you two, but I just feel, I guess the word is justified, because I feel that, you know, as racing fans, and especially us on this pod, we're big fans. We are predisposed to looking for the best from our players. And we've been watching Sav DeMello play and keep looking to ourselves, looking to each other, looking at our neighbors in Lynn Family Stadium and saying, this is special. This is a different kind of talent. We're watching somebody that came in, we're thinking maybe she comes in and acclimates eventually, come in and start bossing a game the way she has, and to see that it's being recognized, it's being noticed on the national team level, it's just very, very gratifying.
It is very gratifying, and I'm very thrilled to see it. What are your thoughts, Michael?
I'm glad that she earned the honor to make the U.S. Women's National Team. You know my feeling about international soccer. It's just a way to go send your players off to get injured. So I'm happy for her. Just stay safe and come back healthy.
Come back healthy. Well, let's move on to our commercial break. And Becky, we have always had this segment as a place for us to shout out to those companies, those organizations that are working hard for racing. And I think tonight I want to say a shout out and a thank you to the fans. If you are listening to this podcast, you are a racing fan. And if you showed up to Fill the Fam, awesome. I know that over half our listeners are usually out of the Louisville area. You can't make it to games, but man, we feel you. this was a tough loss. We're going to get into it in just a second, but thanks for being a fan. Thanks for supporting this team. There are brighter days ahead, and you know, we feel you, we hear you. Let's go racing.
Awesome. I agree 100%.
Excellent. Well, let's move to it. Big loss after a big game means we've got some big ideas and big thoughts. And Michael, that's why we have asked you, and you have graciously given your time, FloridaLeeFC.com, the paper of record for everything racing Louisville. Our listeners know where to find you. Talk some sense to us. How are you feeling right now? What are your thoughts on racing? Good, bad, or ugly?
Well, before I get started, you know, for those of you not familiar with me, let me give you a little bit of a content warning. I am a very specific type of racing Louisville fan. And I think more than any other league, I believe that the fans of the NWSL are diverse in their backgrounds, attitudes, and experiences toward the sport. So not everyone listening is a fan in the same way in which I am. So this next bit is for the folks who love Racing Louisville Football Club and not casual fans or fans of a particular player or treat the club as a diversion between U.S. Women's National Team matches. This is for fans of the club. That being said, I'll start off with a rhetorical question that I will try to answer. But the question in my mind after seeing that performance and trying to process it was basically, what is the standard of excellence for Racing Louisville? And does the team even have a standard of excellence? More than any other issue at the club right now, that's my greatest concern. And the thing about a standard of excellence is it has to be demonstrated and earned. You can't buy it. You can't implement it. You have to demonstrate it and earn it. I would imagine that a large number of listeners to this podcast are also fans of Louis City. And if I asked those fans, what is the standard of excellence for Louisville City? I think most people would give some sort of version of this, which is Louisville City makes the conference finals as a bare minimum every single year. Now, for that to happen, there's probably a little bit of luck involved with all that tremendous effort that it took for that statement to be true every year. But the fact is, it remains that that is the current standard of excellence for Louisville City. They make conference finals. So why is that important? So first of all, I think it's because it establishes a floor for performance. And if Lou City were to go a couple of seasons and not make the conference finals, you would expect changes to be made. And it's also important because every time a player pulls on a Lou City jersey, they know that the level of performance required to achieve a conference finals leaves little to no room for a drop in effort. In essence, at any point before, during, or after a match, you know the expectations, and the expectation is you're expected to win. It should also be noted that a standard of excellence is different than a goal. And I'm sure it's every single NWSL team's goal to make the playoffs and win championships. The difference is that clubs with an established standard know what it takes. Now, we all know that NWSL culture hasn't been great, so I'm not going to necessarily laud the Portland Thorns, North Carolina Courage, or Washington Spirit leadership for the way their organizations have been run. But I will laud the players on those teams for understanding what it takes to be a team like Portland, whose standard of excellence is to be one of the top contenders for a championship every year. Or the Courage, while they've had a dip in form in recent years, understand the level expected from them to challenge for championships. So conversely, do you think a team like Gotham or Orlando have an established standard of excellence? I don't consider those teams of having any kind of established standard of excellence. So secondly, why it's important to kind of have a standard of excellence is it's a way to integrate new players. So we talked about Sav DeMello getting her first, you know, women's team call up. And so do you think she has any question about what is expected from her and what her level of performance needs to be in that camp? And so when she pulls on that jersey, she knows what it means. And then she knows when she looks around what she has to do to see if she belongs there. She has to put in the effort, you know, commiserate with every other player there. So conversely, what does it mean to pull on a Racing Louisville kit? And I honestly don't know. You know, what are the expectations beyond the standard coach or player speak about giving 110% or leaving it all on the pitch or playing to represent the city? The fact is there's no winning in racing's culture or DNA or whatever you want to call it. And I don't say maybe it's a little bit too early to expect that, but I will tell you that the San Diego Way is miles ahead in its quest towards establishing a standard of excellence. You might complain about the fairness of the hand that they were dealt in regards to their location, draft rules, et cetera, but that club was committed to winning right away, and they've done so. Racing seems to me committed to a style and a system, which is a luxury afforded to you when you're Manchester City, Real Madrid, Barcelona, or even Louisville City. In my opinion, it isn't a luxury that can be afforded to an expansion franchise trying to play a style that historically hasn't worked in the NWSL. So I'm obviously not in charge and never will be in charge of Racing Louisville, but I wouldn't care about the manner in which I won. And I would use every tool, player, trick, even if it was a dirty trick, in the book to win. That's because more than anything else, I want the players to know that Racing Louisville are about winning, full stop. I'm definitely not saying this team doesn't want to win, but they seem to be preoccupied with winning in the style and system that the club prefers and a certain type of player. So as a player, what are you to think? And I'm not going to pretend to know what the players are thinking, but if you look at the most recent performance on the field, I think it's fair to say that they aren't showing enough fight. And for me, the fight that I like to see is not the one-on-one battles that you either win or lose through individual effort. It's the fight you put in to be a better teammate and to make your teammates better. Where was the midfield help when Malph Pugh was running down the field unimpeded? Where was the effort in the zonal marking on both of Yuki's goals? Where is the understanding that was demonstrated between Yuki and Pugh on the long ball that sent Pugh in for the fourth goal? This may be a fantastic group of friends off the pitch, but they play like it's the first time they've ever played together on the pitch sometimes. The biggest issue, frankly, is that there just isn't enough winning in their DNA, culture, or whatever to establish a standard of excellence where, like Chicago, you can look at their history and say they've gone to conference finals. They know how to get back to basics, know what they do well, and then grind out the needed result. So I'm going to end this the way I end a lot of my soliloquies, with a story about Arsenal. Arsenal Football Club has existed for over 135 years. They've won a lot. They've lost a lot. But every player that pulls on that jersey knows what it means to represent the club. So Arsenal recently signed a player named Oleksandr Zinchenko from Manchester City this summer. He has played a grand total of 3 competitive matches for Arsenal, and he missed the most recent match versus Fulham on Saturday due to injury. And if you want to know what it means to fight for a football club, go check out the videos of him on Twitter. That dude is all in. And if I had to guess why he's all in after 3 matches, here's my best guess. First, he understands exactly what his coach demands from him in regards to his level of performance, having worked with Mikel Arteta at Man City. And second, he understands what it means to put on an Arsenal jersey and the standard of excellence expected by his manager and the fans. And thirdly, that standard of excellence pushes him to be the best teammate he can possibly be. He didn't play a minute on Saturday, and he lived and breathed every moment of that match. He ran off the bench to celebrate the winning goal, and I have to believe that he would run through a brick wall for his teammates, and his teammates would do the same for him. And after watching those clips, I was ready to run through a wall too. For Racing Louisville, because there is no standard of excellence, there's no walls through which to run. And I've said my piece.
So I agree with a lot of that. I do think that, yes, Racing absolutely needs to figure out a winning mentality, because they're far too talented a team to be winning these few games. And yes, they've had bad luck, and yes, they've shown progress, but they don't know how to win. They just truly do not know how to win. At the same time, though, this has been a turmoil season. So, I mean, they are just learning how to play with each other still in a lot of ways. And I think it takes time to establish a standard of excellence, especially without, like, the deep veteran leadership that a lot of other teams have. But by the same token, like, yeah, I think one of my biggest concerns with the team is that I feel like they've become complacent in being good enough. They haven't been awful. and they've been comfortable getting draws, even though they say they're not. And I know that they're frustrated after matches, but they're too comfortable being competitive. And I said in my article, like, they were either going to fall on their faces or they were actually going to break through and win. And I hate the fact that they ended up falling on their faces, because I think that demonstrates what you said, Michael, that, you know, that there isn't a level of expectation of winning in the culture of the team that would push them over the next level. By the same token, though, I feel like a lot of the fandom is acting like this is the apocalypse and that this is the worst thing that has ever happened in the history of racing, and racing has had worse losses. I think this game looks worse because we have been competitive all season. And, you know, this was a point of pride. We were going to sell at the stadium and we were going to have all these people here. And it was going to be this wonderful game where racing took advantage of Chicago while they were in poor form. And then we played an absolutely horrible game. I mean, I'm not going to sugarcoat it. Like, every single person on racing failed on Saturday. It was a bad game. But I also think bad games happen and they're crap and everybody's really angry about them. But almost every other team in the NWSL this season has had almost an equally bad score. And they didn't all collapse and say that, you know, everything is falling apart and this is the worst thing and our players aren't good enough and are, you know, the team is on an only downward trajectory. I mean, we've really only played two truly bad games all season, this game and the North Carolina Courage game. So from that perspective, you know, things aren't that bad. But on the other hand, the way we lost was so bad that, yeah, there needs to be a mentality change on the team. And I think that that's the responsibility of the players and the coaching staff. I think Kim needs to be much more proactive in making this be a winning team and setting the expectations of winning. And I don't even know, I mean, I'm saying this, I don't know how to do it, but you know, every time they play poorly, he says, oh, I'm so shocked. It's like, well, you shouldn't be shocked by this point. I mean, they're doing the same mistakes again, and that's a coaching issue if your players are making the same mistakes over and over again. But the last thing, and the thing that I absolutely agree with you the most, Michael, is that, yeah, I think a big problem of this is the adherence and the fidelity to a style and an ideal of a philosophy over what we have and what we can do and what we can be as we are. I think that's affected some of the players we've lost in negative ways. I think that's affected our mentality. And I think it's also, I don't think we're here yet, but I mean, I don't blame some fans for wondering that the club is just looking at all these players as expendable and movable. And no team, no player should absolutely be like 100% protected all the time. I mean, like, obviously there has to be movement in squads if you're going to build and you're going to grow. But we've had massive amount of turnovers. And like you said, Michael, I feel like they're looking for the perfect players on paper. And instead, they're not looking at what we actually have and what we can actually do. You know, our players are having to adapt 100% to our tactics and what's being asked of them. And God bless them, they're trying their best to do it because they believe in this club and they believe in what the team is building. When I really truly believe Kim and the front office need to look at our players and say, hey, how are we going to set them up for success? And I don't 100% believe that that's what they're doing.
So, Michael, I got a question for you, if you don't mind, because I follow the Premier League very, very peripherally. So I'm going to speak in generalities, but forgive me, because I think I'm going to get pretty close. So for about a decade, Arsenal was awesome. Then their manager got kind of old, got kind of out of touch. You spend about 5 or 6 years in the wilderness, you know, outside of top five, outside the top six. All the other clubs are making fun of you. You get on Twitter and everybody's making jokes about Arsenal. And then things have turned around just in this last year, season or so. So what changed?
They got the right manager and handed him the reins. And we're patient with him. There's not one way to win, but the way Arsenal has turned the ship around, hopefully, I wouldn't say that they're 100% there yet, but the signs are pointing to that that they have turned the ship around is that they have found a manager, and this is going to sound eerily familiar, gave him free rein to ditch players that didn't agree with his style and give him time to implement his system, but also then go out and get him world-class players that did fit in his style. And behind every single bit of this, which is kind of my point, is that you have a fan base that is so hungry to win because they know what it's like to win and they know what it takes to win. And when they saw, and when they've seen the first four matches this season, they understand the difference on the field. And that's the other thing I'd like to say about the fans. And this is going to sound like a dig at the fans, and I don't mean it to be, but it's just going to come out that way. So I'm just going to say it. I don't necessarily think we have a right to be upset about Racy's performance so far because, you know, again, the expectations are maybe a little bit too much for the team as constructed. This is going to sound like a bash on the club, and it is a little bit, but Racy kind of threw their hands up on the season when they traded Ebony Salmon. She could have made a difference in the matches that happened during the CONCACAF and Euro period when you know the team was shorthanded. I feel like that she could have made a difference there. So for me, from that point, I just felt like the club wasn't taking this season seriously. That they were saying, okay, we are going to not give up on the season, but we're focused on the long term. So I said, okay, message received. You don't care about this season. I don't care about this season. So every match that happened after that, you know, I care to some degree, but I wasn't necessarily going to let it upset me one way or the other, you know, because you started off the podcast asking me, was I upset about the 4-0 loss? I was like, no, I've been upset about nothing since then because they're not playing for this year. The league season, to me, they kind of gave up on. I don't want to say they didn't have a plan. It didn't seem to the fans like, or at least to me, like they had a clear plan about what they were going to do to try to acquire talent. And they just left those three or four matches on the table that they could have put a better roster out for, and then just decided, nope, we're not going to put out a better roster for that. We're just going to kind of plan to get our roster right.
I mean, the biggest pushback I have against that is that it's a hell of a lot easier to get players in literally every other league but the NWSL. You know, NWSL has so many rights issues that it's easy to say, we should have had someone lined up, we should have planned things, we should have done this and that, but I mean, it's hard. It's also hard to do it in Kentucky, as we've talked about in this podcast. You know, I'm sorry, that's just the way things are. I agree. As soon as Salmon was traded, that was basically the team saying that we're in a rebuild. You know, we're gonna fight, but you know, there's gonna be a lot more change this season than settled, devoted, focused play to get to the playoffs. And you know, the players might strongly disagree with that. I really don't know, but you know, it's hard to get players in the NWSL. Salmon wasn't getting minutes. Salmon wanted to move. I'm happier that we let her move if we weren't going to let her play. And let's be honest, Kim wasn't going to play her. If he was going to play her, he would have played her earlier in the season. But we were so beholden to the system that wasn't going to happen. So wouldn't you say then the best thing we should have done was let her go and just kind of settled into a rebuild? I mean, what do you think the team should have done differently?
I would say just wait four matches and use her. But you know, again, that's nitpicking. You know, I would agree with the challenge on getting players to come here. That might be a challenge. We were probably dealt dealt from the bottom of the deck when it comes to the NWSL on the draft, the original draft. But I just don't think, I think you just can't use the summer transfer window to make all of your changes and be taken seriously, because you can't disrupt your season with so many changes. And if they said, we're going to use the 2022 transfer window to prepare for 2023, that's fine. I can live with that. But then you're basically saying we're forfeiting the rest of our season to do so, because we don't think we can get players. We don't think we can get players any other way. We have to use that transfer window. And you just cannot integrate so many new players on a new team with no winning culture by doing that. I that's kind of the whole point of this, is like, it's not one thing that makes this whole thing difficult. It's the fact that if racing had a winning culture, absolutely integrate players, but they don't.
But I mean, that's also, the team is only 2 years old and it was made from scratch. I mean, to say like they need to be more like Arsenal, that's 135 years old. I mean, come on, give me a break there. Yes, no, you're right. The Wave has a winning culture. They're doing fine. Racing should be doing things much better. Clearly, KC got a winning culture after not having one last year. So it's possible.
Or the year before when they were Utah.
Or the year before when they were Utah. So it's clearly possible for the switch to flip. But I mean, I also, and I think that we need to see much more evidence that they're working towards it. But I mean, you also can't expect the team to come out and be like, well, guess what, everybody, with this new coach and we're implementing this new style, we're just gonna have this year be a wash.
No, I don't expect them to say that. I expect fans to be realistic and manage their expectations based on what happened.
Okay.
It's like, you can be upset about a 4-0 loss, but again, what do you expect based on what you've seen? It's like, that's why I'm not upset, because we're you know, the team is rebuilding. It's like we had to use a summer transfer window, which I think is suboptimal, to get the team ready to go next year. Okay, I understand that. But then I'm lowering my expectations as a fan, and I'm not getting upset you know, on a 4-0 loss, because those things are going to happen. So, you know, you're absolutely right. You know, I would say, you know, my main point is that, yes, I understand it's going to take some time, but the fans need to temper their expectations a bit. It's like, you can't have it both ways. You can't, you can't complain about losing, four nil and have your club, you know, and just turn a blind eye to the fact that your club just, you know, went through and changed a bunch of players. It doesn't work that way.
Okay, I agree with that entirely. And I'm actually not as disappointed now that I have a little distance from it, from the game, for the same exact reason. I feel exactly the same way, which Tom is exactly the opposite. So Tom, what are your thoughts on everything Michael's been saying?
Well, you know, I'll get to my big point, because it really dovetails nicely to what Michael was saying, along the same lines, and that for me, with Racing's front office, the Fill the Fam game was a canary in a coal mine. We came upon that canary and it was dead. The front office for me lost a tremendous amount of faith and confidence with this team and how they can construct it. And I'll tell you why. Because, you know, this game was, for this season, a must-win game. Did I expect Racing to come in and win? No. Did I think that it was possible that they could lose? Yes. But you had a tough win-loss record this year. You didn't have the results that you were wanting. And this was going to be a moment where we could have taken a bath as a club, as a fan base, and said, all right, we're filling the fam. We're celebrating. We've got all these promotions. Let's have a result this time. We don't need to win every game. We don't need to make the playoffs, but let's win this time. And this team, from the top to the bottom, should have been focused on winning this game. That means meetings should have been tighter. Game planning should have been tighter. Everything should have been tighter, as if it was a playoff game. They should have treated it like a playoff game, because that's the way they wanted us fans to go out. And the fact that the team played as poorly as they did is an indictment, in my opinion, on the front office. And I'll tell you what, you know, Kim said that he watched every Racing game last season. Great. Who watched all the Red Stars games? Who watched the Red Stars games? Because I'll tell you, when somebody in the front office should have been able to raise their hand and say, is this the lineup we're going with? are these the tactics that we're going with? Because the Red Stars have been to the league finals the last few years with a solid midfield, a dominant midfield, and Mal Pugh. And our back line that we put out there, we're putting them at midfield. How are we putting them in positions to succeed there? Mal Pugh had more space on her side than she has had probably since high school. And nobody in the organization could have raised their hand to say, you know what? Lo Merlet will run her heart out, but she's a converted midfielder. Let's give her some help. Gemma Bonner is a warrior. Gemma Bonner has broken her body for this club, for racing. Lester is a gutty player, but they do not have the top end speed to match Mal Pugh. And this organization still put them at midfield, leaving us wide open. And you said, so why did we not have faster players back there? Because this club has acquired three defenders this season, and none of them could have matched Mal Pugh running in the midfield. And guess what? Mal Pugh, she's in this league. How is it that nobody in this front office looked at this and said, all right, if this is how we're going to play, if this is how we mandate, we need to have players that can match Mal Pugh. You know who can? Emily Fox. And you know what? The second that that game started and Pugh was lined up on opposite Emily Fox, you know what she did? She switched sides. And Yuki got those two goals off set pieces, but those were based on runs that were made down that side where we had no help for our players. So what is the fix? And the fact is that there is not any institutional NWSL knowledge in the front office. And that's a problem that needs to change. There is nobody in there to raise their hand and say, look, this isn't going to work in this league. You know, Michael was talking earlier about Arsenal getting a new manager in. There's not as much film on the NWSL. We need to get people in coaching positions, in front office consulting positions that can speed up that learning curve. Because right now, the front office is running racing the same way they're running Lou City, and they can't. Lou City's been around for 6 years. You look at, you know, we're talking about a coach we're talking about a coach, you know, Coach Kim with a year on the club. You know, Coach Danny Cruz has been in the league for 4 years. That sort of institutional knowledge matters. And until this club gets that institutional knowledge in the building, and I don't know how you do it, but you got to do it, then we're going to look at results like this again.
So I definitely have a lot to respond to that. And the first thing I would say is that we definitely know how to play the Red Stars because we've played them well in the past. They're one of the teams that we actually have probably a better record against. So, you know, I think this is honestly just as much on the players as it is the coaching staff, because the players did not execute the game plan that they had well. I also don't think that they adjusted the game plan well. You know, they eventually did, but I mean, put Fox in the three back, which is like a whole other thing that pissed me off. But regardless, is that like I think the team had a game plan. I think that they were prepared. I mean, Emily said that they knew exactly what they were supposed to do and how, like, who was supposed to do what with Mal, and it just didn't happen. And so, you know, multiple players dropped the ball in that game and played badly. And so I honestly think that this was as much of a player issue as it was a coaching tactical issue. And I also think that, again, this is a very young team, and not that we can't use that excuse forever, and I think we're running out in the end of this being an excuse, but they're young and they got rattled really quickly and had no idea how to come back from it. And I do think Kim needs to be much better about encouraging the team and talking to them and like calling Malay over and telling her, you are giving up too much space in the middle of the game. I think he lets them sink or swim far too much in matches. And that's my big concern. But I mean, I think they were prepared going in. I just think that they did an absolutely crappy job of executing. That's my impression.
Yeah, but Becky, let me chime in there real quick. You know, I would agree with you know, just about everything you said. The thing that was most disappointing for me, just watching the performance, what was the players just didn't seem to fight for each other. And that was probably the most disappointing thing. You know, every player on that team knows that when you've got Mal Pugh running at Bonner, that you need to get back and help. I don't care what else you need to do, drop everything, you know, bust the line, get back there and help. I didn't see that. That's not being a good teammate, in my opinion. So I don't think it's overall like innate selfishness. It's just learning how to be a good teammate and just, you know, busting your tail for your teammates, because I didn't see much of that, of any of that in that performance. A lot of people left isolated on defense, you know, and no amount of planning is going to compensate for that. Because remember, you got teams on the other side planning as well. You got to be able to adjust. And a lot of times, you know, an adjustment in effort is what you need. And that was the most disappointing thing to me, is I just didn't see an adjustment effort. They just didn't seem to be playing for each other.
No, they didn't. And this is the first time I've seen it like truly this season, where like they didn't fight back and they didn't try and rally more. And that's worrying. I'll be a lot more worried if it happens again in this season. But, you know, sometimes you need really awful games to change your mentality. I mean, maybe the way you build a winning mentality is by saying, like, that was so awful, and we did so awfully, and we can see that we were segmented, that we need to improve that and do better. So that's the positive outlook on it.
Let me ask you all this.
No. I need to finish responding to everything.
Oh, sorry.
Because we can't let that just hang. Everything that you, if anybody knows me at all, you know how much, I mean, my God, the staff will be like, yes, Becky doesn't shut up about this. I tell them constantly that they need NWSL experience in the front office, and that they need people helping to run the team that have NWSL experience. But if they did, I don't know if that would have won us this game. I think with the NWSL experience and what people who are more familiar with the league would do would help recruit players, honestly. And do things of that nature that are much more long-term and advanced than actually necessarily. I don't think that they're like, oh, the NWSL is so different tactically that we need someone that has that experience in order to play these teams. I just think that we need someone who just understands the culture and the way things work in this league and in women's soccer better to provide that front office background. And then the other thing, and this goes back a little bit to what you said earlier, Michael, about, well, Louvre City has a culture of winning. You know what Louvre City also has that Racing did not have at their inception? An entire front office and staff that was focused on only them. Racing is split between people who are focused on Louvre City, which is a known successful team, and Racing, which has been sputtering. I absolutely think that this team 100% needs a GM underneath James O'Connor, underneath the president, and, you know, Louvre City probably needs one too on the other side, to strictly handle operations just for Racing. I mean, if you could, I would go even further and say that they need their own ticketing staff to run, you know, promos and to sell tickets just for Racing, and not have it also be related to Louvre City. We know that they have specific comms people and stuff like that, and actually Racing has an individual staff that is, believe it or not, bigger than some NWSL teams. You know, even not counting the Louvre City people that work double duty, but Racing needs a dedicated leadership staff that can only focus on it, I really think, to take it to the next level, and it's doing it a disservice to split everything between the two teams. That's the last thing I'll say.
Yeah, Becky, that's a really good point. I'm glad you brought it up on kind of how Louvre City got started. You know, they had an entire staff dedicated to them. You know, the other thing that Louvre City had going for them was that they had a guy in Wayne Estopinal who was a part owner in the Orlando City franchise that moved to Louisville, that was able to bring along a winning culture with him, because he'd won championships in Orlando and kind of on day one knew what it took to win in the USL. So he had that day one. You had an owner who understood the league and understood exactly what it would take to build a winner. So you had that kind of institutional knowledge of the league. I think sometimes people forget that too, is like Lou City started with a brand new roster, but they did have a little bit of a jump because they had an owner that understood. Yeah.
And I also think that last thing, Tom, because I know you want to talk, I'm sorry, is that, you know, obviously the people who are in charge of Lou City built a very winning team in Lou City. And they clearly thought that they would be able to replicate that with racing very easily, or at least like, oh, soccer is soccer, we'll be able to do that. And you know what? Like, I don't blame them for that, but I think especially, you know, after this year too, they need to take a little more of a step back and say like, hey, we could probably do better by having people that are much more, I mean, we're the only team right now without official staff or assistant coaches or anybody embedded in the senior team who's a former player. We're the only one. And most teams have multiples. And I know that like Libby Stout, who actually didn't play for the NWSL, and Kincaid Schmidt, who played through college and I believe in some of the lower leagues, are with the W League, and like, hey, that's awesome. And I know they help out with racing. Hey, that's awesome. But if you don't have these people in formal positions, even if everybody respects them and likes them, if they don't have any formal power and if they're not part of the power structure, I'm sorry, that just doesn't count. You can't pat yourself on the back for that. We need people with NWSL and women's soccer history embedded in the leadership of this team, so they know how to approach these problems and avoid some of these pitfalls. And I don't think that necessarily would have saved this game, but I think it would definitely put the team in a much better position.
Morgan, Michael, like, you guys are killing me. Like, you've just made all of my exact points, except for the point where I said that it, no, I do not think that, that you know, having X player would have caused that 4-0 loss to be a 1-0 win or an 0-0 draw. For me, it was a culmination because okay. That was such, it was so bad. I thought, how can they get out of this? How can they get out of this? Because like I said, in my opinion, this was a must win game for this season, for this club, for this fan base, for what they're trying to build. And I do not see a way forward without getting some NWSL, get some former players in here. Like you said, Becky, I mean, that's where I come through because, you know, James O'Connor has earned a tremendous amount of goodwill. He has earned faith with the fan base, and he has earned the benefit of the doubt with many things in this city. And I wonder if it wasn't James O'Connor that was club president, if the front office would be getting more questions on this club this season.
Oh, I think he gets torn apart by a lot of fans, honestly. So, I mean, honestly, I think the front office, I definitely want to just add, I think they've done a lot of things right. When you talk to the players, they say that they trust in JOC. When you talk to the players, they say we are being well taken care of and we're happy. But I mean, I'm not saying that you can take too good of care of players. I mean, I think they should be taken even better care of and have like even, you know, I don't know, better everything, of course, because, you know, you players react the way they're treated. But I also think that like something Michael alluded to, too, is that I think they're all just maybe a little too complacent and happy. I mean, I think that maybe they just get along so well that they're not holding each other accountable for playing better, like for needing to play better on the pitch. That's something that I've honestly wondered, and it was interesting what either of you think about that.
I mean, that thought has crossed my mind. I don't necessarily read too much into the fact. I'm glad that everybody on the team is likable and gets along. That's fantastic. It's good. I'd rather they win. They could all be jerks to each other and, you know, refuse to talk to me. And as long as they won, I wouldn't care. So it probably creates a great work environment for them. And I'm not saying those things are mutually exclusive. You know, it would be great if this group of players turned it around and won. I don't think we could, it would be It couldn't happen to a more deserving group of players. If this specific group of players could turn things around and start to win, they would absolutely deserve it, and I would be happy for them. But you do wonder a little bit about, is there just a little bit of nastiness or something that is needed in order to be ruthless enough to win?
I don't think it needs to be nastiness. I mean, I think it just needs to be holding each other accountable. I mean, you can do that without being nasty. You can encourage each other to be ruthless and say, you know, you need to do this differently. I mean, one thing that we've talked about a lot is that, like, I don't know if we've talked about it on this pod, but all of us have definitely discussed this offline, is that, like, our players are not calling out to each other on the pitch at all the way other teams do. And it's not because, like, they hate each other and are icing each other out, because they all seemingly love each other. They say that repeatedly. They say how well they get along. But they don't know how to talk to each other on the pitch. And, I mean, I think that maybe they need to be more shouting at each other, honestly. I mean, I think we're missing that kind of, you know, not even screaming bad things, but, like, just awareness and communication on the pitch a lot. I mean, Emily was asked about that after the last game. They said, well, what can you do better to improve communication? She said, well, we just need to be better about talking to each other, and then laughed, because it is that simple. And so, again, you know, I think some of this is experience. I think some of this is youth, because, you know, so many of the new players we've brought in are new to the NWSL, and it's a very different league structurally. I mean, look at how well we did against AC Milan, because they gave us all the space in the world.
Right.
You're not going to get that in the NWSL. And so when we're bringing teams in or players in that are used to playing in those environments where they have more space and everything, like, guess what? It's going to be a really tough adjustment for them. But, I mean, is, again, Racing setting them up for failure by perpetually bringing in players from international leagues that have not played in the NWSL before? Yeah. I don't know. I don't have answers to any of this.
Yeah. You know, it's funny, if you take a step back, you wonder if, like, if push comes to shove, if Racing Louisville is one of the top 25 teams in the world, they just don't get a chance to show it because they play the, you know, the other 12 teams are also in, that they play all the time, are also in the top 25.
No, we actually, we joked about this in one of the group chats where, Zach, who hosts Soccer City Radio, said that, you know, the real answer to this is we just need to join Serie A.
Yeah.
And, like, if we just transfer to Italy, and I said that we should just secretly say we're Luigiville and, you know, just slide in there, and, you know, that all our problems would be solved.
Well, Becky, along that, you've now that we're laughing, we're smiling, I was wondering, do you feel like it's a good time for you to tell us what your big idea is on this podcast? Michael's given his, I've given mine. The floor is yours.
I essentially already gave mine in response to Michael's. I mean, and we've actually mostly already talked through mine, to be perfectly honest. I don't think this is a catastrophic game. I think that there were a whole lot of things that were set up for this game that made it a huge disappointment. And I was very, very, very disappointed afterwards. I was very sad. It was an ugly loss. It was an unpleasant loss. The best thing about that whole game was the final whistle blowing and ending it. I mean, I'm not even kidding. But, you know, like I said earlier, it's only our second really bad loss all season. We are underperforming. We should be winning more games. We are a talented roster, and I think that there's a lot of criticism that can be given to the coaching staff. And, you know, as Michael said, all the shuffling around that they decided to do mid-season, as opposed to, you know, trying to get some of this done earlier, that's the cause for a lot of this, you know. But what will really make me upset is if we have another game like this when we return back from the break. In isolation, I don't think this is awful. But if we come back and we don't play for each other well, and we have another, I mean, even if it's a 0-2 loss and not a 0-4 loss, if we come back from this international break and play that scattered? Because I mean, it looked like all 11 players were playing a different game than the person next to them. It looked like there were 11 different games going on for racing and one game going on for the Red Stars, and that's why the Red Stars absolutely killed us. So if we play like that again, then that's going to be a huge red flag. But I mean, I forgive them one really bad, ugly loss, as ugly and as unhappy as it was. And I mean, I hope this is a wake-up call for everybody. I mean, that's really the best case scenario. I mean, I also said this earlier, sometimes you need to like really fail in order to turn things around. You know, like you're in school, you're getting C's, you're getting B minuses and maybe like two A's. You're like, nah, okay. I mean, do I really have to put that much effort into anything? But when you get that F and suddenly like you're embarrassed by how bad things are, you know, sometimes that's the kick in the butt you need to do better. But, you know, we have 5 games left, or do we only have 4? We have 5 games left.
It's 5.
We have 5 games left. They're against, you know, teams that will be tough. I just want to see good games. I want to see us close the season out as positively as we possibly can. I want to see us playing for each other and actually starting to unite. And, you know, we've been saying that we need this season to build chemistry. Well, we need to actually start seeing them build chemistry. And I want to see a little more urgency from them. Like, even if they're not going to make the playoffs, and we know that, I want to see a little more urgency from the team to get results, to say, okay, we're sick of draws. We're sick of this. We are going to do what we can to concentrate, to not get distracted, to not overthink things. Because Emily Fox said in the post game, you know, we overcomplicate things for each other. And I think that is nail on the head response to what racing did. You could tell they could not get out of their heads the entire game, which is why they weren't seeing each other, which is why they weren't playing together, because they were so in their own heads. And that's a very young player thing to do, but anybody who has ever played any sports will know that that's the worst thing you can do. And Michael, we actually had a conversation about this, so I would like your perspective on that thought in particular.
Yeah, I've played, you know, several sports, none very competitively, but it didn't matter if it was golf, basketball, tennis, you know, on the soccer pitch. The moment I'm in my head, I've lost. That's just how it is. I can still remember to this day playing tennis with a guy that was probably, I don't know, 5 times better than I was. And we were just playing single games. And he hit a serve toward me. And without thinking, I threw my racket out and hit the best return I've ever hit down the line and scored the first point. There was no thought, just reaction. I just reacted and hit it exactly where I needed to go. So then I got in my head, I say, okay, I need to do that every time. And I lost, you know, the next 4 points, you know, to him, because I was immediately in my head after that, you know. You know, it's just so important, I think, to sometimes trust your instincts on the pitch and just not get caught up in the moment and thinking about where you need to be or... you know, you can't be spending large amounts of time or even really any amount of time on the pitch thinking at all. It has to all be natural and instinctual. And for young players, that's hard, because a lot of them are coming from directly from college where they had time to think, they had time to kind of contemplate their next move. You don't have that time in this league to do that. And even sometimes I think the international players are coming from leagues where it's slow enough to be able to have a half a second to process and think. You just don't have that here. So, you know, it's very important to kind of, you know, stay out of your head. And I'm, you know, people are going to get turn this podcast off because I'm going to talk about Arsenal again.
We'll timestamp it, Michael, so that people will be able to like do a fast forward 30 seconds.
Yeah, 55 minutes in, just ignore for the next couple minutes. No, there's this very famous goal by Dutch player Dennis Bergkamp, who played for Arsenal. He scored it against Newcastle. I can't remember if it was 2002 or 2003. You Google Dennis Bergkamp goal, and you'll see it. But the thing he gets asked about this goal all the time was, did you mean it? And if you have ever seen The Goal, you understand why people ask him this question, because it's such an unusual thing he does. The ball comes into him and it's behind him. He hits it with his left foot to the right, turns counterclockwise, shoves off the defender, and then scores the goal with his right foot. And in real time, it looks crazy. It looks like there's no possible way he could have planned any of that. It was a complete accident. So he gets asked all the time, was that an accident? And his answer has just stuck with me, because I remember his words to this. Is like, what part of it do they think I didn't mean? And when he says that, what I think he's trying to express is every bit of that he meant. When the ball was behind him, he had one option, and it was to hit the ball with his left foot and hit it to his right. And when he did that, his body was already turning counterclockwise. So instead of changing his direction to go toward the ball, he rotates away from the ball because that's the direction which his body is going. And by doing that, he shoves off the defender and is able to circle around and beat the defender to the ball and slot the ball in. You watch it in real time, it's crazy, but every one of those things that he did was instinctual, but he didn't think about it. It was just the right thing to do in the moment. And to be able to get to that level, I think, is kind of the next stage for racing players, is you have to kind of know what to do in every situation without thinking about it. And that is a hard thing to do, and it doesn't come easy. That's when you'll know you've reached the next step, is knowing when to do something instinctually in the moment without having to do any kind of mental processing.
And that, for me, is the real question for racing that will not be answered until next year, because we need to see more time with Kim. Because, as we've talked about earlier in this, you know, the club is so adherent to the system. This club is so adherent to the style. Are we keeping players from playing instinctually because we're playing them so rigidly in a specific style? I mean, on the one hand, you absolutely need a style, or you're not going to have any organization or anything to play for. You know, like, a style sets a standard to a certain extent. But are we not letting the players play freely? I don't think we're not. I mean, I think we are letting the players play. They just get in their head. And, like, I mean, the other part of the Emily Fox quote, and what she actually said before what I quoted or paraphrased earlier, was that we care so much that we overcomplicate things because we want to be essentially the ones to fix things, and we want to be the ones to save things. And so, I mean, I think that they're paralyzing themselves with their own wish and desire to be the one to save the team. And so that's why they're playing individually, because they're like, I need to take this on myself, instead of being like, we need to get in the flow and we need to get into it together. But again, it's hard to tell yet if the style is suffocating them and stifling them, or if it's just a matter of them working their way into the style and eventually being able to have it become second nature. Because when you talk to other coaches, you know, a lot of them say that, yes, when, you know, we started implementing a style, we lost all of 10 games of our season. We had a 0-10 record. And then the next season we had a, you know, 10-0 record. We won all 10 games because it became second nature to them. But yeah, I mean, they're just too in their heads. And honestly, with everything that's happened this season, how can they not be? You know, they haven't gotten wins, and that's clearly eating at them. There's no way it wouldn't be able to. It has to be mental at this point to a certain extent. And I don't know if they're going to be able to truly get past that until next season when they have a clean slate. But yeah, that was really interesting commentary, Michael, about, you know, being too in your head and learning to play instinctually and the incredible things that can happen once you let your instincts just kind of take over. Tom, what are your thoughts?
Oh, I mean, I'm nodding in agreement. I think, you know, paralysis by analysis is a real thing. And I think we've all probably experienced that in our lives. We don't need to be a top level team, or you don't need to be a world-class athlete to realize, oh, I was overthinking something. I should have just, you know, pulled the trigger on it, you know. And what I wonder is, you know, first of all, we've got a minefield of a game coming up next. You know, Becky, you had said, and I think we all agree, like, we don't want to, you know, as much as I was, you know, the a voice of the super disappointed on this podcast regarding the last game, you know, I will agree with Michael, and I'm sure we all will agree that, man, a win will make you feel good. The problem is that we're going to North Carolina team that has always been a tough matchup for us.
And of course, we're playing them right as they're getting hot.
Playing them right as we're getting hot, as they're getting
hot. Yes, so as
they're getting hot, they've got ground to make up to try and to get in the top six. They're no easy games in this league, and that's why, you know, and I won't re-go over what I was saying earlier, but what the next step that Racing needs to take, it is going to be a hard step. This is the toughest league in the world. Every team that we play is coming to cut our heart out. Everybody has us scouted. Everybody knows what we are looking to do. Everybody has already figured out what the counterpunch is for our tactics. And we need to not only play freely, but then also know how to counter their counter, answer their answer, to really take that next step of winning consistently. I think that Racing can do it. I think we've got the talent to do it. I think we've got players that are ready to step up both in their play and in their leadership to do it. But I think it's going to be a heavy lift. But that's why we watch, to watch the journey.
And I mean, especially this season, there's no question about it now. Teams are coming to us and being like, okay, here's an easy, not easy, but here's a pretty likely 3 points or at least a point that we can get. You know, Racing is a team that you can get points off of. Where
and to go back to what, so they're playing freely. We're not making them think.
Exactly. We're having the exact opposite. And we're thinking like, oh God, they're thinking that about us. And then that we get in our heads. So, I mean, that's a big ask to break out of that, but these are professional athletes and they're mm-hmm. going to need to do it. And I also think that, like, you know, our coaching staff absolutely needs to step up. Kim needs to step up 100%. And he needs to, I think, you know, guide the mentality more strongly and say, you know, like, pump them up, because they've been coming out too flat. Someone needs to pump this damn team up before they step out on the pitch. And they know that, and they need to figure out how to do that. And the players also need to step up. I mean, mentality is a whole team and whole staff issue. And if they don't come together and figure it out and create a standard themselves, then we're going to keep struggling. But I also give them leeway because they have had so much turnover, including in the coaching staff. And, you know, this is a new team and it's a very young team with not that much veteran guidance. And the veteran guidance that we have is honestly pretty new, or like Nadia has not been around a lot of the time due to injury and international travel. So, I mean, obviously I'm biased. A lot of people would probably say that I go too easy on Racing. But the bottom line is, I think just we need to see more growth from everybody, the entire team, and we just need to give them time. You know, being a fan is being a fan through the hard times too. And I'm not saying you can't criticize them. We absolutely should criticize the team and you know, give our opinions on what needs to be done better. But we also just need to give them a little more grace, I think, looking at everything that's happened this season. Because no one is taking that loss harder than the players on the pitch. Because Nadia was distraught, and all the players were distraught after that game.
That's true.
And, you know, they know they lost 4-0. They know they lost 4-0 on a game that was supposed to be their playoff game, like you described, Tom. You know that they know that they let everybody down. They know that they were embarrassed and embarrassed themselves in front of a record crowd. And, you know, they can either take that and use that as motivation, or like Nadia said, they can put their head between their legs and cry about it. And, you know, we'll see what they do. That's all we can do.
Yeah, but I think there's a difference between, you know, being distraught after the match. I'd rather see a little bit more distress during the match. And I think that's the shift that that we'll be able to tell. We'll know they've turned the corner when we can see the reaction during the match, to have them be able to turn things around when things aren't going their way. And that's a tough thing to do. But I think that's when we'll know they are starting to turn the corner, is when they can fight back. And, you know, even if, you know, after going down 2-0, it's like fight back and get to halftime, you know, 2-0 or 2-1. Because it's one thing to say after the match that, you know, you're embarrassed by the performance. It's another thing to do something about it in real time.
Sure.
It's like, that's why I'm going to have plenty of patience with this team, frankly, just because it is so new, and it's hard to learn how to win, especially in this league as a new franchise. I mean, I think that was the whole point of my opening statement, was that, you know, it's, you've got to have a standard, but it's not something that comes easily. You have to figure out whatever you can do to win. So, you know, I think I would encourage fans to be patient even into next year. Now, I think we get to the middle of the season next year, we don't see changes. We've maybe got to make some different changes then, but, you know, I think we just need just a little bit more patience. And I know a lot of times people, the other thing we got to just say out loud is that people's reactions on Twitter aren't their real reactions. Twitter's not a real place. So we got to kind of take everything there with a grain of salt too. It's like they may tweet it on Twitter, and then, you know, immediately after that said, why did I tweet that? Or that's not really how they feel. That's how they feel in that moment at that time. And then they may feel different 10 minutes later. You know, like you said, Becky, if you'd have tweeted something after the match, I'm sure it'll be quite a bit different than what you're saying now. Sure. So I think we got to give the fans a little bit of grace there too, to say, just because they said it right after the match in the heat of the moment doesn't mean that that's how they feel right now after they cooled off a little bit.
No, that's fair. But I mean, I guess like the absolute last point I want to make is, I mean, there's a lot of people who are looking at our team now and saying that, like, oh, last year's team would have been so much better, and last year's team wouldn't have had these issues. And like,
well, those people are just morons, by the way. So we'll just dismiss them for what they are.
Okay, Michael's not a host of this podcast, so if you are one of those people, please keep listening to us, because that is not an opinion given by Tom or Becky. But I do disagree with those people who have their own thoughts that they're totally allowed to have. No, I mean, like, we were not a good team last year. We won a number of games through pure luck and the fact that we were a surprise and we were new, so people didn't have footage on us. We clearly needed to make changes, and you can definitely disagree with the changes that were made, but, like, you know, we needed a rebuild, especially after the coaching change. So, like, this is essentially year one again. I think we just need to have a lot more patience with the team, but I also totally understand being really upset because Saturday sucked.
Well, Michael, I am going to disagree about having an opinion right after a game and then keeping that opinion, because I remember last year, we got our heads kicked in at North Carolina. And after that game, I said, Continental Tires can go straight to hell. I will never buy Continental Tires.
No. You said, as God is my witness, I will never buy Continental Tires again.
As God is my witness, I will never buy Continental Tires.
The first thing I ever read that Tom had ever said. So that was actually my first introduction to Tom.
And I'll tell you what, past Tom was right. No Continental Tires for this family. Never again. I will remember that forever. All right. Well, we're coming towards the end here. This has been a good cathartic discussion. I think we've been well balanced. I think we've hit all the major ideas and points. Wrapping up now, Michael, we'd like to thank you for coming on, giving us your time, giving us your opinions, giving us your knowledge, giving me some Arsenal YouTube clips to look up. We didn't win this last week, so no addition to the statue, but Becky and I have been ending the last few shows giving out 3 points. We could have 3 points from each of us. That's 9 points. That's a lot of points. Instead, let's go 1 point from each of us and kick a, be good, bad, or indifferent. And then that will total up to 3 points. And I will go first. And my point is just a comment on the stadium, that before Phil the Fam, I've said it before, one of my favorite things to do is to go and take a look at the player pictures and get an idea who's starting. We do not have a picture of Wong Shuang yet, which was obvious because there was a group of fans wearing Wong Shuang personalized jerseys, taking a picture in front of the blank picture frame in which Wong's picture should have been. So, hey, heads up to a racing staff. When you onboard a player, make sure you get that headshot because people love to see the pictures before the matches of the starting. Becky, what's one of your, what's a point from you?
That's a great point. I just want to start with, because they really need to get on that. Like for the Women's Cup, I was like, oh, okay. You know, maybe they didn't have it together. When I walked by and saw they didn't have it for this game, I was like, come on guys, like get it together. Yeah. You get posters printed, and I know that it, they get printed well in advance, but you get posters printed for every game. You can get one card printed for Wong Shuang, even though we only have a few games left. Like, please, especially because, like you said, there have been a lot of fans coming just to see her. I've seen a lot of people in Wong jerseys with Wong posters,
yes,
who are super fans. So, also sticking to the theme of fans, or continuing that thought a little bit, my point is that, you know, I actually had an exchange with Michael on the field right after the game, and we looked at each other, and I think you were the one who say it, Michael, even though I think I said roughly the same thing, that like, wow, you know, this was a bad enough game that it may have actually like hurt the team and hurt the club. You know, we had so many new people who were coming to see that game for the first time, and we were like, man, you know, a game that dire, that's bad. But when you look on Twitter, and I remember seeing that, like, that night even, it was filled with people saying like, oh man, my daughter and I just came for this first game, or I came with my friends, or my parents came. They're thinking about looking up season tickets because they had such a fun time, because the stadium experience is so great. And because, you know, the crowd is fun and the Legion is fun, and it's just a great, it's a beautiful place to be. I mean, hey, is the game not going well? You have a beautiful view of the sunset and the bridges to look at, and that's lovely. But, you know, people who are, you know, casuals who want to follow a winning team, like, yeah, not having another non-winning season is going to impact season tickets. It's going to impact ticket sales. There's no doubt. But like, I was very heartened by the fact that, you know, the players and the attraction of the players and the attraction of the stadium and the attraction of the club is still getting new fans. And if we can have a season where we are down and now on a 12 game winless streak and still break our attendance record with just, you know, a little extra promotion and prompting, that says very clearly to me that once this team gets it together, there is a large fan base that is going to be there to support them. So yes, the club, the team, the players, they need to do their part, and they need to start earning wins. They need to create a winning mentality, and we will sell tickets. Like, that, the people are there. If you can build it, they will come. And I never really saw it that starkly or had it that proven to me before Saturday, even with dire results. I think it was almost hammered home more strongly because it was such a poor game, and there was still that positive reaction. And I know both of you have said that you know people who have said that they're thinking about getting season tickets, or they were first-time attendees and had a great time. Michael, didn't you say that?
Yeah, I brought my buddy Jeremy, who I play pickup soccer with, and he brought his girlfriend to the first game, and she brought her parents. And after the match, her parents told Jeremy, he's like, yeah, we're going to look at getting season tickets for next year. That was a blast.
Yep. Great. Awesome. So, Michael, what is your point that you would like to make about this week or the team or anything in general right now?
Well, just a couple things to respond to the situation on Wong is, I don't know if you noticed the scoreboard graphic also needs updated too. When they flashed up kind of the,
yes,
the blank, they flashed up the blank graphic and it still had the rain on it.
Yep. Yes, that's right. That was
so
awful.
Get on top of that, racing, and
sloppy stuff like that, really, like, oh, it was a small mistake. Yeah, but it was a small mistake in front of a record crowd. Get it together.
Yeah. And I'm very aware of Wong's fans. They all come over to my section and crowd me out after the game, where they try to go in and get autographs. They did a much better job of kind of lining around the bench instead of trying to cram everybody into the front row there and, you know, squeeze squeeze this out there, but very aware of Wong's fans and very excited to see, a group of fans so excited when we get Timmy Kotlana next year. I'm hoping we see some individual fans of her come and do the same thing. Absolutely. I'm sure she has some fans as well. So that's always a neat thing. It's a cool thing to be an international club, and I hope that the fans do not take that for granted. The final point that I would like to make is just to remind everybody that I'm an idiot, and my opinion, just because I have a platform, is not any more valuable than yours. So if you disagree with me, you are more than likely correct. I may be as Tom says, quote the paper of record, but just because I say it doesn't necessarily make it true. So know that I spout as much nonsense as everybody. So if you disagree, don't hold it against me. I won't hold it against you when I disagree with you.
And I mean, I think that should really go for all of us. I mean, we have this podcast not because we're right about everything and have all the solutions. It's because there are opinions and people are more than likely to disagree with them. I mean, if you have a good faith, constructive argument about something we've said that you disagree with, awesome. You know, I love it. We started this because we wanted to get more people talking about racing, and we wanted to get, you know, conversations happening about racing. So like, yeah, never feel like you can't think that something we've said is stupid, because it very likely is.
Well, that is a great way for us to end up this podcast. Michael Shaw, FloridaLeeFC.com. Thank you so much for joining us. Becky Morgan, even coming off of a 4-0 loss at Phil the Fan, you know what? This was still fun. Let's do it again.
Let's definitely do it again.